All right, good evening. So we've been discussing the how Mashiach is going to come or when Mashiach is going to come. And what we essentially had discussed last time was based off of the Gemara in Masech Sanhedrin on Tzadi Zion, which is that it depends whether or not we're deserving, that if we're deserving, so then Mashiach is going to come more speedily. If it's lo zachus, then it's going to come be'ito. If we're not, at the level where we're deserving of Mashiach, so then it's going to come at its appropriate time. Exactly when that is, the Rambam pointed out, is something that we don't hope, we don't know, we don't have a good mesorah for exactly when that is ultimately going to be. But there is an ultimate time when Mashiach is going to come. From the time that at least from one time I was a kid, and I think that it's something that many people are familiar with, is that there's this number 6,000 that gets thrown around, right? The Mashiach is going to come by the year 6,000. So, I mean, that seems to be contradictory to the conclusion we came to last time, which is that we really don't know when Mashiach is going to come. So where exactly does this come from? Or is there any teeth to concept that Mashiach is going to come in the year 6,000? So it's a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin on Tzadi Zion. Over there, these were all the Gemaras about Mashiach. Most of the Gemaras of Mashiach are over here in Masechet Sanhedrin in the last parak. The Gemara quotes the following Braisa. Tan de Be'el Yo says, Sheshes Alafim Shana Have Alma, that the world is going to last for 6,000 years, meaning that this world, the existence that we have, is 6,000 years. Shnei Alafim Tohu, the first 2,000 years is Tohu, is nothingness, which nothingness means that it was devoid of Torah. For the first 2,000 years was devoid of Torah. What happened after those first 2,000 years? So at this point, Avram was in his early 50s.
Avram was born in 1948.
He was born in 1948, right. So now Avram's in his early 50s, 52 years old, I guess, right? In the year 2000. What is Avram now starting to do at this age? He is going out to Haran, and he is starting his whole Kirev movement, where he's influencing everybody to monotheism, recognition of the oneness of Hashem. And Avram is going after the men, and Sarah is teaching the ladies. And so this is happening in the year 2000. So from that point forward, continues the Bryce and says, Shnei Alafim Torah. These are the 2,000 years of Torah. From then until the destruction of Second Beis HaMikdash. From that point until the destruction of Second Beis HaMikdash is 2,000 years. So that is the beginning of the world in its access to Torah, i.e. the wisdom of Hashem, until the conclusion of the development of Torah through Torah Shebaal Peh, which happened while the Beis HaMikdash was still standing. That is the end of 2,000 years. And then that's the end of 4,000 years. And then Shnei Alafim Yemos HaMashiach. And then the next 2,000 years, which we are now in the year 5,783 of those 6,000 years. So what would that make it? 1,700 years into this final phase is the Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach, which is just amazing. You stop and consider.
This whole 2,000-year period is the time
is of Mashiach. The Yemos HaMashiach. So that's what amazing is about to point out, is that what that means is that Yemos HaMashiach began the moment of Churban HaBayis. The second that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the process of Geula, the redemptive process, began. The moment that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. In fact, we know that the first go at rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash was not that long after the destruction of the Second Temple, with the Bar Kokhba revolt and Rabbi Akiva thinking that Bar Kokhba was, right? Meaning, at that point, we were already, in fact, there's a measure that says, Mamish at Churban HaBayis, B'nai Israel were already starting to be deserving of Mashiach. The Medrash points out, amazing. We know the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra on Sadi Aleph that when Hashem is happy with the Jewish people, so the Kruvim, the The angels on top of the childlike angels on top of the Aron are facing one another when Hashem is happy with us, and their backs are turned to each other, turned from each other when Hashem is not happy with us. Right? There was one time in all of history where the Kruvim weren't just facing each other, but actually hugging. The Medrash points out they were hugging during Korban Abayi Sheni, during the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash.
I thought they didn't have the ark at the second.
In the second, no, it was hidden after that point.
So this is what the Medrash says.
It's a discussion, Ligamar. Exactly when it is that we lost the Aron, but not lost. Maybe it was hid away on purpose, right? It's brought down in the Rambam that it was dafka hidden away, which is fascinating of itself. Why that is a halacha in Mishnah Torah, but that's a separate discussion. But bottom line is that many of the commentaries point out on this Medrash is that because at that moment, even during the destruction, the Jewish people were already engaged in a macro teshuvah, recognizing how they messed up. They were engaged in such a teshuvah process to the point that the Kruvim were hugging and that we're almost deserving of the Beis HaMikdash actually being rebuilt at that moment. So the Geula process happened as soon as the destruction took place, and then the Geula process began. So that is what we're in the middle of and coming to the end of. So when you put all that together, sounds like the Mashiach will come by the end of the year 6000. So that is where one may come up with this idea. I mean, it's not stretching too much. It seems to be a straightforward Gemara. In fact, there's an interesting Ramban that what's the significance of this 6000, the 6000th year being the year where will certainly have Mashiach by. The Ramban actually says that there's a correlation in the first six millennia of the world and the 6 days of creation. And then the seventh millennia is the millennia of Shabbos. In fact, we sing in the Zmiros, we refer to the days of Mashiach as Yom Shekulo Shabbos, Umenucha L'chai Olamim. It's the day of It's Yom Shekulo Shabbos. It's the day that will entirely be Shabbos-like, and it will be Menucha L'chai Olamim. Forever there's going to be Menucha. That's in reference to the days of Mashiach. Says the Ramban, that's the seventh millennia. The seventh millennia is the millennia of Shabbos. It's going to be Shabbos from that point forward. He writes, he says, V'a'elef ha'shishi, ki b'tchiloso yimshulu bo, that after the 6,000th year, kibitchilasu yimshulubo hachios heim hamalchios asher lo yadu es Hashem. Before that, we weren't fully aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'achrei ashirato kishir ha-gates hachama liyom yavo ha-goel. Then Mashiach is going to come, shenam arbo v'chasu ha-kashemesh negdi zeu ben David hanase betzalam elokim. This is a reference to David HaMelech coming at that time period. And then he continues and he says, V'nira, Mashni ha-yamim misharitz ha-mayim va'of l'cheyos ha-arz ki b'tchilas ha-elef ha-shishi, at the beginning of the 6000th year, tischadish malchus uma sholetes v'im sani v'tikiva yisera, that it's going to be this new reality, v'skarvos el ha-emes yoser men ha-rishonos, and then we're going to come closer to the truth more than ever existed in the world. That is what's going to be in the seventh millennia, the one that correlates to Shabbos. So that is that's what the Ramban points out. However, the Ben Ish Chai in a really fascinating work, the Ben Ish Chai wrote a number of different works. Chacham Chaim Yosef of Baghdad. Yosef Chaim of Baghdad. He passed away in 1908. And he wrote a Sefer in Halacha called the Ben Ish Chai, has some Kabbalah in there as well. He wrote a number of other Kabbalistic works. He wrote a classic on understanding the Agadahs, the more esoteric or mystical portions of Shas, called the Ben Yehoyada. It's an amazing work. But then there's one Sefer in particular that he wrote that is really interesting. It's called the It's called the Tshuva's Torah Lishma. What's the Torah Lishma? So the Torah Lishma, if you look at the the cover page, you look at who wrote the book. So it doesn't say that it was written by Rabbi Yosef Chaim of Baghdad. It says that it was written by I think Rabbi Cheskel Kachli, something like that. Rabbi Cheskel Kachli. Who's Rabbi Cheskel Kachli? You do a Google search, try on Wikipedia, try and find information. So Yosef Kachli, you're not going to find anything about this Yosef Kachli, Rabbi Cheskel Kachli. Who is this individual? So so if you look at the introduction of the work and you read through it, the Ben Ish Chai tells the story. He says that I once was having a dream, and appeared before me in my dream was this fellow, Yecheskel Kachli, who explained that Yosef Chaim, I'm a Gilgal, a reincarnation of this individual, and that his whole life he had been working towards preparing this this work in halacha and Jewish thought called the Torah Lishma, and he never had an opportunity to publish it. And so he told me all of his Torahs. That this is what Yosef Chaim said. He told me all of his Torahs. And so now I'm going to write the work on his behalf, being that I am his Gilgal. I'm here in his stead in this world. And so he writes the Sefer, the Torah Lishma, by Yecheskel Kachli, really ghostwritten by no pun intended, ghostwritten by the Ben Ish Chai. It's really an unbelievable work. He has one particular tshuva in there that's really fascinating about what bracha the Jewish people made on Mon. Interesting in halacha, it has practical ramifications as well. Well, why does it matter in halacha what bracha the Jewish people made on Mon? Because it really gets to the question of what bracha do you make on a food that grew in a source that it wouldn't have normally come from. Say bread that wasn't made of wheat and flour that grew from the ground. What bracha do you make on such a thing? That's essentially what mun was. Where does that come up practically? Hydroponically grown fruits and vegetables. My wife just sent me a picture that she was at Ralph's, and Ralph's is selling, they have at the hydroponically grown strawberries. Mm-hmm. What bracha do you make on hydroponically grown strawberries, right? So Rav Ovadia actually, and most post him, right, that the bracha is shahakel.
Yeah.
Bracha shahakel, because it didn't grow in the ground. Rav Sternbach says, no, strawberries, cucumbers, are strawberries and cucumbers, and strawberries and cucumbers get a hadama. What bracha you make on a cucumber? Hadama. What bracha you make on a strawberry? Hadama. Therefore, it gets hadama. It's that the fruit and vegetable have categorically taken on the status of the bracha that was originally assigned. But the Rav Ovadia and most poskim disagree. I think actually the OU and the Star K, their policies are shahakel. I say, yeah. I mean, this was already a thing in Eretz Yisrael for a very, very long time. Now it made it all the way to La Jolla eventually. We're always a few years behind. But it's interesting. It's a fascinating, fascinating topic. So anyway. So he writes in the Torah Lishma, he says that that there's no way we can read this Gemara literally. He says there's not a chance that we can actually know when Mashiach is coming. He says, simply because that would not be good for the psyche of the Jew in Galus to know when Mashiach is coming. If we know when Mashiach is coming, so then number one is that we're not going to pine for Mashiach's arrival. The whole concept of Tzapita Yeshua is going to fall out the window. Number two is that the danger of what if Mashiach doesn't come by the year 6000? So then we've been hanging our hat that you can have people that their entire foundation of faith is built upon the fact that Mashiach is coming by the year 6000. There is end in sight. And what if it doesn't? So instead of chalking that up to, well, we don't understand the ways of Hashem, instead it's going to be chalked up to this whole thing may be false,
yeah.
Right? And so it's going to lead people completely off the derech. He writes, he says, this is, he's addressing the question, when is Mashiach going to come? And he says, teshuva, the answer is, haked shel be'ita, the time, and he's using the language be'ita, meaning when Mashiach, we know for sure the end time, not the time where you can come earlier than that. That's what we hope for, right? It's hopefully Achishana, as we were talking about last time. Hopefully it's sooner than its final you know, time. He says, "Mukhar shiya kodem kama shanim misof ha'alef hashishi." It's definitely going to happen before the year 6000. It's without question. It's going to happen before the end of the year 6000. She'im hu besof alef hashishi mamish, because if it was for sure, it's going to happen at the end of the 5,999th year. Imkei nimsi yadua hu, then it's going to be something that everybody knows, and that can't be. Umahu inyan stimas haketz haniskeper b'kam b'kolmos b'chazal shaketz amiti hu sasum b'chasum, that we have evidence throughout Chazal and even in the Torah about the fact that this is something that's supposed to be hidden from the Jewish people. What's most famous? The most famous example of this is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, on his deathbed, what does he do? He gathers his children to tell them what's going to happen at the end of days. And then what happens to Yaakov Avinu? Nistalka Shechina Mimenu, that he lost his Ruach HaKodesh, he lost his Nevuah at that moment. And then he had the Gemara in Psachim on Daf Nun talks about how Yaakov Avinu became very anxious at this moment. The Medrash says that he actually started yelling at his kids, thinking that one of them was a non-believer, which is why he lost his Ruach HaKodesh. It's the first time this happened, right? And it's really because this is something we're not supposed to know. So it can't be, he says, that you read this Gemara and it means we know that Mashiach's coming in the year 6000. It can't be. It has to be. It's coming before that. We don't know when that's going to be. But it can't be it's the year 6000. That for sure it can't be, because that's something that we've never had access to. Okay.
Wouldn't the same thing happen when let's say it doesn't? I mean, saying for sure it's going to come before 6000, then if it doesn't, then we get to
meaning 6, this is what we believe, though. Meaning this is part of our tenets of faith.
That was a problem with, you know, specifying the date.
Yeah, so he doesn't. So he doesn't deal with that. The Rambam really deals with that. The Rambam writes. He says, in fact, it's really the Gemara. The Gemara already says something along those lines, where the Gemara on the next daf in Sanhedrin writes the following. It says, Amar Rabbi Yonasan wrote the following. Tifech atzman shel mechashve kitzin. That anyone who tries to suggest that they know when Mashiach is coming, he says that the wind should be taken out of them. Tifech atzman, the wind should be taken out of them. This is what the Gemara says. Shayu omrim kivin sheagiyas haketz veloba, because then people are going to say that since this is the time that this individual said Mashiach's going to come and it hadn't come by then, shuvenoba, then our belief system is going to go out of window, because we're going to believe, Mashiach's never coming. And the Rambam echoes this as well. The Rambam, we had mentioned the beginning of this Rambam last time. This is actually, it's like the third to last entry in all of Mishnah Torah, where the Rambam is dealing with Yemos HaMashiach, and he gives caution to studying these topics in too much depth. Now, nobody laugh at me that this is what our, like, we've already been doing this as like our 24th class on the Yemos HaMashiach. But this is not the depth. This is the surface level of what we've been doing. The Rambam is saying you have to be careful about going in too much depth in Yemos HaMashiach. In fact, the Gemara in Hagiga on Daf Yud Daled says that if a person focuses too much on eternity and studying these topics, it can make a person crazy. So the Gemara has a story about the Arba Nechnasu LaPardes, the four Tanaim that went into Pardes, meaning they went into this world of eternity, and it can drive a person crazy. It can drive a person crazy. So the Rambam's giving caution to that. And then he says as well, he actually writes, he says that if you go too deep into these topics, he says, Ein mavien lo liyidei ria, lo liyidei yira, v'lo liyidei ava. The result will not be yira shemaim, and it will not be ava sashem. That's fairly strong language. Now the Rambam himself, though, has, you know, two chapters on Yemos HaMashiach in his Mishnah Torah. Again, giving us just a basic fundamental overview to the topic, but not in too much depth coming to any sort of conclusions. The Rambam says we can't come to definite conclusions in these matters. And then he continues and he says, V'chein lo yachshev hakitzin. You cannot give a definite date of when Mashiach is going to come. And in fact, he quotes now from the Gemara we just read, Amr Chachamim tifech rucham shamachash ve'akitzin. That the Chacham say that the wind should be taken out, the spirit should be taken out of those that try and come to these conclusions. Ella yichakev yamin bechlal hadavar kamosha biyan. Rather, we just believe with complete faith in the general principle, in the fundamental idea that Mashiach is coming. When? I don't know, but I know that it's coming, and we believe that it's coming. In fact, Rav Kook noted, he said that this concept of tzipit li Yeshua, this concept of pining for and desiring the redemption is really the midah. It is the characteristic that has kept the Jew in Galus alive. What else has kept us going throughout Galus, right? Why? How else could it be that Jews literally marching into gas chambers are singing animam, right? It's a reason for it, because this is the thing that keeps us going. This is the thing that keeps us going. And if we come to any sort of conclusions, then that could either tell us, okay, nothing to pine over because I know when it's happening, or God forbid, even worse, is that if it doesn't happen at the time that people say it's going to happen, so then we can lose our faith over it in general.
Look at the month of Nisan. And then you say last Friday.
So now, but we don't know exactly which Nisan it's going to come, meaning whenever this final date is, so it's going to come in Nisan. So Seymour's asking, okay, but what if that final date is, right, not Nisan? So I think that there's at least some wiggle room over the fact that we don't know what year that is, right? So at least there's some wiggle room there.
But then these numbers, like last Friday, would arrive last Friday.
Hopefully. We have to believe. We hope.
In Christianity, this has happened many times. It's called millenarianism.
Yeah, with that.
They say it's the millennium and we're going to have the second coming. And that there was a couple of huge ones in the United States.
With the Y2K thing?
Well, Y2K, we had a rabbi here. I won't mention his name. He came twice in the past and said we were going to get Mashiach on Y2K.
Oh. Okay. Remind him of the Rambam.
And he was related to Moshe Feinstein. Maybe you remember.
Didn't he also say that the O.J. Simpson trial was...
Yes, that's the same guy. Yes.
Okay.
He predicted the fall of the Soviet Union. Yes. It was like... Yeah. It's a nutty.
Yeah.
Next time, and a lot of wacky ideas.
The classic book on this is called When Prophecy Fails.
Uh-huh. All right, so somebody should show him the Rambam. I'm going to show him the Rambam. Yeah. In fact, I kind of feel badly quoting this next Brysa, but there's a Brysa in Masech Derech Eretz. If you notice the end of, to interesting exercise to do, you look.
We could talk about a shoot that we saw in 1990.
He came twice.
Well, 93.
I put it. That was a mistake.
There's a reason why the Salaves and the Lakins are on the list of honorees at this year's Eitz Chaim Gala, right? Right? 18 years or more. Come on, that's nothing. 18 years. Oh boy. So I'm afraid to quote this next Bryce. It's interesting. There's, you know, a lot of people aren't so familiar with the and it's cool to look at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah in Shas, there's a whole group of like five or six short mesechtas, short tractates of brisas, called the Masechta Ketanos, the short brisas. In fact, Rav Chaim Kanievsky had a parish on each one of them. He had a commentary on every one of them. Rav Chaim was holding in everything. So one of them is called Masechta Derech Eretz. It's a lot of ideas and, you know, just in Metzlichkeit, like similar to Pirkei Avos. And there's one line over there that now I kind of feel, you know, nervous quoting it, but the Brysa said it, not me. Rabbi Yoti said, Hanosein es haketz, that if somebody says this is the date Mashiach is coming, ein lo chelik l'olam haba, that person lost their place in the world to come. It's a, so we have to be very cautious when going about these topics. And that's why we don't do anything. It's definitely not in these classes, but we should never, when learning these topics, do anything that's outside the realm of real strong Masorah. What I mean is Rambam, Ramban, Maimonides, Nachmanides, the Gemaras, Medrash. Anything beyond that, though, is something we have to be really, really cautious about, as the Rambam writes. The question then has to turn into, which is, okay, fine. So we can't know when Mashiach is going to come. So then the question has to be, well, being that we certainly don't want to slow down the process, we want it to be Achishan, as we were talking about last time. So then it'd be good for us to try and understand then what exactly our role in Galus is, meaning that on a macro scale, for the Jewish people. Last time we mentioned, you know, some things as individual Jews should be doing during Galus in order to speed Mashiach's arrival. But here, just talking on a macro scale, right, we're talking about when Mashiach is going to come. And so then the Jewish people need to understand what our role is supposed to be during this time period as we're waiting and pining away from Mashiach's arrival. What is, on a macro scale, the Jewish people's role? So it actually is a Gemara in Masechta Pesachim. The Gemara in Masechta Pesachim writes the following. The Gemara writes, Amar Rabbi Lezer says, Lo higla HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Yisrael lebein ha'umos. The whole reason why Hashem sent us into exile, into Galus, El Kadeshius Yasfu Alehem Gerim, is in order so that we can spread the light of Torah to the entire world. So in order so we can spread the light of Torah into the entire world. Shana Amar, he quotes from a pasuk in Hoshea. Rabbi Yochanan Omer Mahachan, Rabbi Yochanan says another pasuk in Hoshea. So bottom line, the Gemara is saying that what is our purpose here? Our purpose is to spread the light of Torah to the entire world. In fact, that's what the Rambam writes. He says that's what it means that we are the Am HaNivchar, the chosen nation, in the sense that's not necessarily a form of just adulation or bragging rights. What it means to be the chosen nation is that we are chosen to have the heavy responsibility of spreading Torah to the entire world and being a light onto the nations, being people that need to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah. I remember once a friend of mine in yeshiva, when he had his first job, he's a little bit of a chutzpahdik guy, and he was working in his first job in some accounting firm, and he'd gone to work, and hey, he annoyed his boss about something, and in the meeting where the boss was whatever reprimanding him or whatever it was, you know, he said that. He said, you know, I feel comfortable saying this to you because, you know, I'm Jewish also. He wasn't a religious fellow. He said, I'm Jewish also. And just, you know, your behavior was not becoming of the yarmulke that you're wearing. That's what he says to him. Now, okay, the workplace, whatever, I don't know if that's it, but okay, that's what he says to him. And my friend responded erroneously, saying, religion is my personal matter. I'm not representative of the yarmulke that I'm wearing. And he's wrong. That's just not true. It's just not true. Whether we're wearing the yarmulke, everybody knows you're a Jew. Everybody knows at this point. We are representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are walking billboards. We're walking signs of the way that we represent the entire people. We represent Hashem. We represent His Torah. And we need to act accordingly. But it's interesting because the Gemara is addressing the question of not what our role in Galus is. Read closely to the Gemara. What did it say? It said, lo higla HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the whole reason why Hashem sent out the Jewish people, Lebeinu Uvas Holam, to the other nations, meaning into Galus, is in order so that we can spread the light of Torah. Which sounds like Galus is a positive thing, right? That's odd. Galus, we generally assume, is a negative thing, right? We're in exile. It's not a good thing we're in exile. So the Gemara in Yuma tells us that the Yerushalmi in Yuma, rather, the Yerushalmi in Yuma on the Dalet says that any generation of the Beis HaMikdash wasn't rebuilt in Ki'ilu Hu Hichrivo is as if that generation destroyed it, meaning this is not the ideal situation. This is a bad situation we're in. So the Marsha addresses this, and he and the Marsha says that that what the Gemara is addressing here is that of course we're in Galus due to sin. That's how we ended up there in the first place, and that as soon as that is rectified, then we will come out of sin. That is what we had spoken about last time. However, what the Gemara is trying to teach me is that it can't be that the whole reason we're in Galus is just because Hashem is punishing us, because we know everything Hashem does to us is for us, for our benefit. So what is the benefit of being in Galus? The Imashum Onesh Chataim points out the Marsha, one of the most classic commentaries on the Gemara in Gavdas from the 18th century, the Marsha's last name was Idols. Interesting. Rav Shmuel Idols was his last name. Oh, no, I wouldn't even think about that until you started laughing. No, not that kind of Idols, with an E, not an O. Rav Shmuel Idols, that was not his original last name. He took his wife's last name in honor of his mother-in-law, because his mother-in-law, when they got married, made a commitment that she would support his learning Torah from there on out, and to as a form of honor, of kavod to her, he actually took on his mother-in-law's name, Idols. Interesting. So he says, "Imashum onish chatayim." If it's just simply that we're in Galus because Hashem is punishing us, efshar hayalo la'onsham b'devar macher. Well, we could have had any other punishment. Why was this the punishment? But rather, it's because Hashem wants us to be rectifying the sin through spreading the name of Hashem, through spreading the goodness of Hashem, through spreading the morality of the Torah to the entire world. By doing that, that rectifies the mistakes of the past. So that is the Marsha's approach. It's interesting. Reb Tzadok of Lublin, who was a contemporary of Marsha. The Marsha was Lithuanian. The Reb Tzadok of Lublin was Hasidish Rebbe. So from a Hasidish point of view, the Reb Tzadok actually reads the Gemara in a little bit of the opposite, with a little bit of an opposite approach, which is that the way we are going to refine ourselves in Galus is, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that the reason we're in Galus, lo higla HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Yisrael lebeinu musa el kadesh shisas v'leim agerim, is in order so that we could spread the light of Hashem onto the world, points out Reb Tzadok. He says perhaps it's that Hashem wants us to be refining ourselves in the Galus process, not to spread the light, but to collect the light of the world, meaning that when we reach a level of people that are lomin mekol adam, that we see value and are able to find the positive in everything that the world has to offer, meaning that even in the obviously evil things, there is some level of Hashem's light in the world, in even those dark depths. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist, because Hashem is only good. So then as soon as we've reached a level where we're pulling in and finding the nitzotzios, is what he writes. He calls it the nitzotzios hakedusha, the sparks of Kedusha that exist in every part of the world. So then we're fulfilling our mission that we're trying to accomplish here in Galus, not to refine the rest of the world, but to refine ourselves in the Galus experience. That's what Reb Tzadok wanted to say. In fact, there's a really awesome comment that's made by the Shem Shmuel, Rav Shmuel Bornstein. He was the second Sukkachev Rebbe, the second and really the last of the Sukkachev Rebbes due to the Shoah. Where the where the Sukkachever is he points out, he says this is not, again, getting back to the point that we brought up before, which is that what the misrepresentation of what we're saying could be is that galus is a good thing, right? Meaning, either you take the approach of the Marsha, we're spreading the light into the world, right? Or it's that from the approach of Reb Tzadok, we're trying to collect light from the world. Points out the Shem Shmuel. He says that could lead a person to think that we need to be in galus. It's a good thing to be in galus, which of course is not the case, as we mentioned before, that we're only here because of the chatos, because of the sins that Kadosh Baruch Hu had the Jewish people had committed against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that we continue to commit against Hashem and to each other. It's the only reason why we're here. So then the question is, well, would we have been able to spread light onto the rest of the world or receive light from the world without Gullus? Says the Shem Shmuel, yes. We would have been able to accomplish that other way. Quotes from the Arizal. Says, we didn't need a Gullus to accomplish these things. It's that since we ended up in Gullus, HaKadosh Baruch, because of the fact that we deserved it, Hashem set it up in such a way where we shouldn't lose out on spreading on the positives that Gullus could offer. Meaning, Hashem didn't want to punish without there being anything positive associated with it for us to be able to grow and develop ourselves as a people by spreading Hashem's light or collecting light in the world. It's that this is the plan B. Plan A would have been for us to accomplish these things without being in Galus, he writes. He says, Ha'arizal zal hiksha. He quotes the question from the Arizal, Im Kain, on this Gemara that we just quoted in Pesachim, that Im Kain, lo chatu Yisrael, that, well, we could have just not sinned at all, and we would have never had galus. Then, how would we have been able to achieve all of this kedusha through spreading Hashem's light and collecting light in the world? How would we have been able to accomplish those things without galus? Points out the Shem Shmuel. The premise of the question is wrong. Then we would have had the strength limshoch aleihem es chelkei kedusha merachok. Then we would have been able to, from Eretz Yisrael, from the Beis HaMikdash, from that place, been able to, plan A, spread light into the rest of the world from the Makom HaKadosha, from that holy and sanctified place in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. But because of the fact that we lost that due to our Chataim of Sinas Chinam, so then plan B kicked in, which is that we still have to accomplish that goal, but from everywhere else in the world. So ultimately, when and how will Mashiach come? We don't know. But nevertheless, we still pine for Mashiach's arrival. We hope and pray every single day that Mashiach's going to come. But hopefully it's going to come sooner than later. It's going to be Achi Shana. But while we're in Galus, while we're in this existence, so we need to make sure that we're using it not just as a as a b'di'evid, that this is okay, Nebuch, we're in the situation, but to find the opportunity in Galus, the opportunity of spreading the light of Hashem into the world, to be able to develop ourselves as much as possible in this world in order so that we can get back to that core nucleus of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, by the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, we'll stop here for now.
Thank you.
So you did say that.